Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 183. Come on over with Jeff Morrow. Everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. Today, I have a really fun episode for you, actually. Jeff Morrow is coming over, and we're going to be talking about a couple of things. His new cookbook, Come On Over, which is all about cooking for family get-togethers and parties and things like that. But we're also going to be talking about some tips and some good ideas for when we can all get back together with our family and have holiday dinners and birthday parties and Super Bowl parties and whatever. We're going to be talking about some stuff that Jeff's got going on, some good tips and ideas for cooking for a crowd. Now, before we get into that, though, I just want to remind you that everything Jeff and I talk about in this episode will be in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/183. Again, that's kitchencounterpodcast.com/183 for the show notes. If you want to send me an email, you can do that at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at TKCpodcast. Probably the best place to find me now and then is in our private Facebook group, The Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. Anyway, that's enough of the housekeeping for now. I want to get over to this chat with Jeff. If you're not familiar with Jeff, Jeff Morrow, he's got a lot going on, actually, right? So we're talking about a cookbook today called Come On Over. He actually has a really, really great podcast that he does with his sister by the same name, Come On Over. So check that out. Highly recommended. But you may have also seen Jeff on The Kitchen, which is a fantastic show over on the Food Network that he co-hosts with, Sonny Anderson, Jeffrey Zakarian, some other folks. Great show. He was on season 7 of the Food Network Star. He actually won that season. That's when I first learned about Jeff. I remember watching that season. I think it was in 2011, which is 10 years ago, and I can't decide if that's seems like a really, really long time ago or not that long ago. Time is warped these days. And speaking of, we've all been under this pandemic, this quarantine lockdown, whatever you want to call it, at whatever stage it's been in for about a year now, a little longer. And, I miss getting together with my family. I've got family I used to see reasonably often. I haven't really seen at all in person. Family holidays aren't quite the same. We're not really having any big family. We haven't had our cooking cook-off challenge for a couple of years now because of this. So I cannot wait to get back together with my family. I know Jeff feels the same way because we talked about it on this episode. And it was really a fun conversation. I had a great time. Jeff is so funny and so genuine. That's what else struck me about him. I mean, he really is very, he's family centric. He loves cooking for his family and getting together. And so this cookbook that he put together is as much of an homage to that, I think, as anything. But this is his first cookbook, and he does have a whole section on sandwiches. So he is the sandwich king. He's got some great sandwiches in here. He's got a pretty remarkable pizza chapter. We talk about that a little bit as well. I will put all of the information for this in the show notes, but without further ado, why don't we jump over and get right into this conversation with Jeff? It was a lot of fun and, I think you'll enjoy it. Jeff, thanks for being on the show. This is exciting to have you here.
Great to be here, Roger. Feeling good.
Good. Good. Now you're in Chicago right now. Is that true?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'm in Oregon, so we're kind of doing a little cross-continental thing here. Yeah, I know.
Never been.
Roger,
I've never been to Oregon.
Are you in like Portland proper or outside?
Well, I'm in Salem, which is about an hour ish on the interstate down from Portland. So right in the heart of the Willamette Valley, we've got, you're going to have to come out sometime because we've got the Pinot Noir.
Yes.
We've got the great produce wine. Is crazy. An hour west and we're eating Dungeness crab.
Oh,
it's paradise. You can get
smelt here 1 month out of the year from Lake Michigan.
That's nice. That's nice.
Sure beats your Dungeness crab now, does it, Roger?
Yeah, I'm going to. Yeah.
I guess you've never had Indiana wines, have you, Roger? Oh, man. But sausage, we got, buddy, the best in the country.
I know. And pizza. Pizza ain't too,
of course.
Too shabby either. So if you ever make it out this way, let me know. I'll hook you up with
for the sure. Yeah. Go.
So you've got a lot of things going on. You've got a podcast. You've got a new book called Come On Over. Which we're going to talk about in a minute. I'm super excited about this book too, because, you know, we've been living through the pandemic for, I don't even know how long, I've stopped counting.
42 years.
I don't see much of my family. I see few of my friends, right? Cause I'm trying to do the right thing and not have big gatherings and stuff. So your cookbook comes along and it's all about cooking for family, cooking for groups, cooking for friends. Right. And it's like manna in these dark times, right? One of my wife and I's guilty pleasures, we watch those Home and Garden TV shows where it's like, we're going to go to the Caribbean and buy a house, yeah, right? And you watch those people, I'm thinking, I want to do that.
Yeah, like Hawaii real estate shows. You're like, this is possible.
We could do this. What do you think, honey? What do you,
I don't know. Right. I know. I wouldn't say that Come On Over is quite as a stretch. Not that you don't have the bank to get yourself a second home in Maui, right, Roger.
Right. Right.
But we are, everybody, at least in my world, even this book starts with being able to entertain literally your immediate family in your home. And then however you feel comfortable, you can expand upon that. But I feel like the manna is getting closer in our grasp, right? We're holding it right now. It's sunny outside as we speak. Mm-hmm. It's getting warmer. People are comfortable being outside. People are getting vaccinated, whatever. We can get into the whole science and all that, but this book is a perfect, it's kind of like a beautiful little Band-Aid that you can put on yourself and pick up and read to either reminisce and get yourself excited for those times in the hopefully near future. You can have 32 people over to your house or just 4 or 5 of your closest friends and making a reverse seared prime tenderloin with all the fixings. You know, this book is going to guide you and help you and entertain you along the way. So at least in my house, spring is here. Summer's coming. I'm feeling it this year. Come On Over will be uttered frequently. Because now people have to expect it now. It's the title of my book. People are like, my mom's like, why haven't I gotten it? Come On Over. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, you've got some expectations out there now. That's the worst thing when people expect things of you. But and the book is very funny. It's got great recipes. It's very pragmatic. It's like real food recipes, right? It's not real unattainable recipes for the home cook. This is really party food, gathering food. But so that all said, I need to ask you some questions because I'm going to, again, expectations and credibility here. You got the street cred for cooking for groups. And I need to ask you some questions that always hamper me when I'm trying to cook for a crowd, whether it's a party or my family, you know, at holiday time. And I get these questions from listeners too, because these are tough questions. So I'm going to, and I haven't given you these. This is totally free form, but I know you're up to the task. Okay. Right. And I just want some good tips here.
All right.
Okay. So first things first, special dietary needs. So what do you do when you're hosting a party? Now it could be different. If it's your family, you probably know ahead of time what you're dealing with, but sometimes you don't. So for example, I have folks in my family who are vegan. I have folks in my family who can't eat dairy just for allergy reasons. I got some folks who can't eat eggs, right? So, or what do you do in those situations? Do you make all the food that everybody can eat? Do you make a lot of different things? How do you tackle that?
Well, if it's somebody, if someone's just being like a ball breaker, being like, I don't like chicken wings, you know what I mean? Or whatever, for sake of not having the palate to enjoy them, I'm not going to break my back trying to appease one person out of several, right? By, you know, repurposing something, rejiggering the whole menu. But if someone's genuinely allergic to something or has a medical aversion to something, obviously I'm going to do everything in my power. That's why I always, you know, you always maybe have one white meat, one red meat, and then one big, huge, roasted, deep, delicious, well-seasoned, robust vegetable dish. I'm not saying, you know, obviously a big salad is always a win, but I'm talking like, you know, just a big, like something that will even entice the meat eaters, assuming that maybe that's the first thing people come across. I'm a vegan, I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat a lot. I like meat, but I don't eat a lot of meat, and I want something healthy. Like, you cannot go wrong. And for me, I always gravitate. That's like the first thing I'm scooping out too, is like a well-prepared vegetable. I have a recipe in the book, which I call my smoked cauliflower butt, B-U-T-T, in quotations, which is a lightly pickled, brined, simmered whole head of cauliflower that you inject with apple cider vinegar, salt, little sugar. So you have this base of like almost a giant, slightly pickled whole head of cauliflower that you smoke or grill or roast in your oven, lacquering it up with your favorite barbecue sauce. I'm telling you, every time I make this, and I, you know, I come from hearty stock here in Chicago. People really, that thing is like almost the first thing to go next to the brisket or the ribs or the chicken, really? Or the Italian beef. Yeah. I'm telling you, like stuff like that, like don't be afraid to make a vegetable the star. But also, as a host, when you take on that responsibility, your responsibility is to try to make everybody happy. It really is nearly impossible in life as it is in hosting, but try your best. You don't want anybody being like, oh man, just gonna sit in there and have some saltines.
Right, yeah, have some saltines, pass the ketchup.
Pass the mixed nuts, you know, pass the filberts.
Oh, we're talking about Oregon. Oregon is big for filberts. I just want to let you know.
Look too.
Now that you mention
like
it.
I planned it. It's like I Googled it while I was telling that story.
Incredible.
The filbert capital of the country.
It is. You're not even joking.
License right now. Plate, I bet.
Yeah, it is. Filbert king, sandwich king.
You guys call them hazelnuts or filberts then?
Well, when I grew up, we had some in our yard. I grew up on the Oregon coast, and we called them filberts. But, okay. But as an industry, they're generally called hazelnuts.
Hazelnuts, right? It's filberts, yeah. Probably.
They're the same thing.
Same thing, obviously, but maybe a more artisanal term or...
Well, I think...
Or what? What's the difference? I never
looked at it. I think it's marketing. So there's a lot of interesting backstory, a little tangent here on the whole filbert hazelnut industry in Oregon. So, you know, Turkey, I believe it's Turkey... the country is one of the biggest worldwide producers.
Original white meat?
Yes.
Oh, turkeys.
Yes. But they're one of the biggest producers of hazelnuts in the world, but it's a certain variety of hazelnuts. And some years back, they had a blight that really hurt their crop. And Oregon is prime hazelnut climate. So the Oregon hazelnut growers sort of stepped up and said, hey, we can fill a void in higher quality, and I'm using marketing terms, right? But higher quality hazelnuts. And so Oregon hazelnuts, so I think Turkish hazelnuts you'll find will be more made, processed, and incorporated into foods. Where Oregon hazelnuts are like chef's kiss, high quality, like those are the eat out of hand hazelnuts, I guess.
Succulent, right?
Yes, those will be the hazelnuts you'll find, you know, whole and candied and that sort of stuff. Or right in the blob of chocolate, right?
Oregon filbert board, so powerful, I bet. Instrumental powerful. In the last six elections, I heard.
Yeah, in Here's fact, I'm scared to even mention them on the show now. There's oversights coming down on me.
There you go. You got to be careful. That filbert board.
That filbert board. Okay.
Get JFK on the blower, right? He's like talking. He's got his chomping on a cigar, talking to all the presidents.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even know how we got there, but we got there.
We got there. Okay, I have another question for you.
Shoot.
And this is a huge question, too. How, when you're cooking for a crowd and you've got a lot of different stuff going on, and I think this is really holiday centric too. This happens to me every holiday that I can have family over. How do you get everything done at the same time? I am endlessly ready to serve and go, crap, nobody did the carrots or, ooh. You know, or, oh my, we've got like 45 more minutes on this well, roast, it sounds like, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest, cause of that, the greatest cause of that is taking on too much, having too big of a menu. I am famous for having a lot of food, but not a ton of choices because it's just easier to control when you got a couple mains, a couple sides, and then, you know how it gets, right? People, my family, everybody's got to bring a tray of something. It's a tray of eggplant. It's a big salad, the thing. the thing. And it's like, next thing you know, you're like, oh my God, how do you even fit a portion of each of these things on one plate? People get in the weeds at home because they either are trying to do too much, or they are doing stuff outside their comfort zone, right? They're maybe taking on new recipes. When you have 12 people coming over who are hungry, probably now's not the time to like, I'm going to smoke a brisket for the first time. I mean, have you been to parties where a guy's like, I just looked at it online, I'm going to smoke this brisket. And then it's like, you know, this takes up to 18 hours. And this thing's, I'm like, how long's the brisket been on? He's like, I put it on at noon and it's like 4:45. You're like, you know, we're going to be sawing brisket in about 3 hours, you know, or you're going to be chopping it up and like simmering it with sauce like that, you know, move. But don't take on too much. Like, keep it simple. I know it's like such a cliche, but I like to like really focus in on like two big stars, like two mains, right? That protein or that big vegetable, a nice salad, a nice starchy component, like a bread or potato, and like focus, like make that the greatest. And don't worry, what I love about tenderloins, right? I have that in my book, you reverse sear it. A tenderloin does not need to be piping hot, right? It could be somewhat warm. You slice it, but you serve it with hot gravy. It's a lot easier to heat the mushroom red wine sauce, you know, keep that piping hot. So when you're ready to serve, you pour it right over. Then it's easier to heat that than, oh, now I got to reheat a giant hunk of prime meat, you know, that you can,
right,
you know, they potentially overcook.
Okay. I like it. How are you doing time? Can I hit you with a couple more?
Dude, you can hit me with, I'm here, man. I'm doing nothing but talking all day, Roger, and you're my favorite one so far.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Likewise. Well, although you're the only person I've talked to today. So.
You just hold up in your room. No.
Yeah.
Who wants to talk to me?
Yeah. This is, you're like a breath of fresh air. Okay. What are your thoughts on make ahead items? Like what's a good, are you against that? Do you try to do everything the day of, or I mean, how much do you bank ahead of time so you're not totally slammed when folks are rolling into your place, getting together, and you're like, you can't even talk to anybody, right? Because you're literally making everything from scratch that day.
I think you have to really make ahead at least a day. And I'm not talking about the major holidays. Like, you know, you make your potatoes 2 days before and you make this. I'm saying like, if you're just having a normal get together, you need, if you know it's hydrated and moist and not something that will dry out if you reheat it on your own, a normal day, like a leftover, don't make ahead something that you don't like to eat leftover yourself, right? So if it's something with a lot of fat in it, you know, like a mashed potato or something, like my mom's got her famous mashed potatoes in there. We make them from all the things. I say it's 50% potato, 50% butter, and 50% cream cheese. Point being, the thermal capacity of that is, you can make it hours ahead. It stays hot for days, I feel like. But you can also make it a couple of days ahead, store it, wrap it tight. But sauces, make ahead. You know, meat, you don't want to make ahead, right? Your main proteins, if you're making pizzas, if you're doing that, you want to make them hot and fresh. But anything saucy like that, make ahead, right? A pasta sauce. I got this a country style rigatoni with like a vodka sauce in it. You can make that days ahead. Fine, cook your noodles ahead of time, your macaroni, your pasta, and then mix it to order. But don't be afraid to like, I like the moments when I'm hosting and there's like not enough to do. I'm like, I can't wait to like combine the sauce. I can't wait to throw the pasta in, right? Like stuff like that. I can't wait to mix this salad because it's all, everything's mised out. I say this is one of my 10 commandments. My 10 come on over commandments is over-prepare. Over-prepare till you're too damn excited. You can't wait for people to walk in the door and get dinner out. You know, like everything's there ready to just you fire everything at once. And that's when you do the most preparation, the mise en place, have the sauces made, have everything, the cheese grated, the bread wrapped in foil, ready to be put in the oven really quickly. When you do that, that's when you can do more and have it all hot, piping, ready for your guest all at once, at one time.
And I'm a big fan too. I bet you are. When I have a big get together, I like to get up early and then actually just, even if it's just on a piece of notebook paper, I just write literally everything I need to do that day because I will forget otherwise. And then I can sometimes arrange it by schedule. Like I know I got to put the meat on now, but I can have all the veggies prepped ahead of time. You know, it helps me a lot to do that.
Roger, you're not alone. I do it too. We call them production schedules, right? That's what you call them in the kitchen, professional kitchens, culinary school. You got to write out your production schedules. I'm not too cool for a production schedule. It makes sense. Even, you know, it's like memorizing stuff, right? School, right? Write it down 10 times. You memorize the whatever you have to memorize, right? It's like the same thing. It's like, oh, I forgot. As I'm writing it, you're kind of putting it on paper, locking it in, and it gives you something, some guidance, right? So you don't miss those, you know, the people. Oh my God, I left the carrots in on the grill, right? And then you're boning a whole dish,
right? Okay, last question. I want to talk about your book for a minute. You, I was going to give you a hypothetical scenario, but I'm just going to ask you straight up. Aside from, you know, your typical skillets and pots and utensils, what's your go-to? I'm going to give you two. You can only take two. You have to plan the party of a lifetime, the get-together of a lifetime. You have to cook for it. You can only have two non-stove-related appliances. What do you pick?
Okay, I would say a giant, well-made, hearty cutting board with the grooves around to catch whatever. Well, everybody needs a cutting board, right? Unless you're like my mom and uses like a dish half the time, right?
You totally went in a direction I wasn't expecting. I thought you were going to say like slow
cooker. I have a collection of them, but I always have this go-to one that I have for every party because you could carve meat on it. You can, you know, quarter up a chicken. You can do all your prep on it. You wipe it down and then you could serve on it because it's pretty, right?
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I have one of those.
And I'm a proponent of like all the meats go on one cutting board, well portioned, well sliced. So you have this kind of non-traditional way to serve your mains or your proteins that is like enticing and rustic in a way. The second one is probably out of left field too. I don't even know if this qualifies, is in your parameters, but I love disposable aluminum pans. I think for prep, for holding stuff, not to serve, I don't like serving out of them. But when I'm doing a lot, and you got to think of the not only the dishes required to get everything hot and delicious out, but also the cleanup, right? Do I want to be left with like giant roasting pans and six sheet pans and all this stuff? And I'll wash them. My wife thinks I'm crazy, but I don't care. Like, I think they're just invaluable, especially when you're cooking outside and you need to like hold something warm on the grill, but also not make it too hot to overcook. You know, I love disposable aluminum pans. The best.
Wow. Yeah, those are good. Seriously, two answers I was not expecting. I thought you were going to say,
what did you expect?
I thought you were going to say something like a slow cooker or I don't know, like a more like hands off, like I can just throw something in it and it'll be ready for party time. I don't know.
No, those are the two. You can do anything. And then you send people home with the things. Hey, why can I give you a third one? Leave it's another pro move.
No, you cannot.
I can't. Please. I have to. I insist, Roger. Okay. I go on Amazon. First of all, every kitchen needs deli cups, right? Mies cups, we call them quarts, half quarts, right? For prep, you wash them. They're dishwasher safe. Leftovers go in there. But I tend to overdo it, as most hosts do, right? It's rather to overshoot than undershoot food. I come from a long line of, you know, giant people that always overeat and always take home what's not, you know, what they can't stuff in. So I go on, I get the black, like Chinese takeout containers with the clear plastic tops from Amazon or whatever. And I like everybody you want. Here's what you can serve yourself, put the top on and take it home. You know, I always make sure I divvy up enough for myself, obviously, but those are like invaluable. Cause then what people do a lot of times, and I see it in my family, and I hate looking at it, and I hate looking at it in the fridge. It's like a paper plate with some loose foil on it, right?
Right.
It's like all exposed.
Yeah.
You can upset.
Dried out.
Yep. There is nothing more unappetizing than like leftovers the next day, and you know there's been like six hands in it already because like the foil is just worked over. And you're like, what is this? But the plastic things with the, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh.
I do. I just had a flashback to like childhood Thanksgivings where the pile of leftover turkey is on a plate covered. And you described it exactly. The foil is like totally munched beyond any form because people have been like in and out.
Yikes. It's like one homogenous, it's just Thanksgiving food. That's what it's been rendered, right? There's no discernible turkey, stuffing, potatoes, mashed potatoes, sweet potato. It's just gravy on top of Thanksgiving food.
And then like a day later, you're left with like the, I call it the banana popsicle syndrome. You know, like banana popsicle, they're always the last popsicle and you'll eat them when desperate. But, you know, it's like, oh, look at the bits of turkey that nobody else wanted.
Yeah, right.
Or picked around to get the good stuff. I guess I'll have that in a sandwich.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's remnants of a turkey thigh. Right. With rubbery skin and a banana popsicle.
Or so.
Oh, man, I smell it and I see it like dripping on my shirt right now, the banana.
You know popsicle. What I'm talking about, right?
Oh, I my mean, God.
Because you used to be able to buy the popsicles and they'd come in two bags and one would be like cherry, orange, and lime. And then one would be like root beer, banana, and wow, that's a.
It was the Super Saver pack, I think.
Yeah, it's like a root beer and banana in the same bag.
That's ooh, root beer good. I never liked either.
No, me neither. That's like, well, that's like 2A. Banana was the worst. Root beer was the second. Anyway. Wow, we go on a tangent.
Yeah,
I'm looking at your book.
Uh-oh.
And we talked about it a little bit, but I want you to just kind of give me a little bit of background. So I know you have a podcast called Come On Over as well.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkably, the same name as your new book.
Hey, what came first? That's a question, Roger. Yeah,
what came first? And is this your first cookbook?
Yeah.
I was wondering about that because I couldn't see anything. And I thought, that can't be.
You know what? It's funny. It's people are like, how long did, you know, took me 2 years to write physically, but it's 10 years in the making, I like to say. I mean, I started thinking about a cookbook when I first had my first, you know, couple seasons of Sandwich King. You take meetings. I mean, this was 10 years ago, you know, you publisher. I don't know. I never felt it. I was like shopping around a sandwich book and then I was doing like a deli book and then it just never clicked. I didn't feel it. And I was scared to write a cookbook because talk to any chef, any cook, any cookbook author, and they're like, do not write a cookbook. It's so grueling. It takes forever. You don't make any money. You spend a lot of money. You lose your shirt and it takes you 2 years and all your resources and heart and soul. And I'm like, sure. You know, 2 years ago, I was like, it's time because I think my career was at a point where I could benefit from this marketing tool, if you will, but I had a lot to say. And that didn't click with me to the words, come on over. It was in a meeting. I was with my agent, a longtime agent. His name is Jeff Google. And he's like, and I said in a sense, I just like, you're like, what do you want to come? I'm like, I don't know. I just want people to come on over. And I just want to like, that's what I do. He's like, that's it. That's the name of the book. I'm like, what? He's like, come on over. I'm like, that makes sense. And I kind of, you know, I embodied that just with my history, my family. I come from, you know, I've got 15 first cousins that live within miles of me. And, you know, we grew up together and we couldn't wait for the next family party. So just hearing those words uttered into the phone, either by my mom or hearing them uttered to my mom from my aunts or my grandma was like, here we go. It's cousins time. We're going to put on a play. We're going to eat our faces off. We're going to go play softball across the street. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. It just always had a warm memory. And that's when that title came to mind. I go, I know now I have the platform for what's true to me in the culinary world beyond sandwiches. I have a great sandwich chapter in there, of course, right?
You do. And that's why I thought it was interesting when I saw it. I thought, oh, you have a whole sandwich chapter and you've got sandwiches in here like you cooked on Food Network Star when you were on that.
Yeah.
And I thought, I can't believe these are not in a cookbook already.
I know it's funny, right? It's like, that's what happens when you wait 10 years. And now the cookbook comes out and I'm like, ask my wife, I just keep cursing myself. I'm like, God, why didn't I put that in there? Man, why didn't I tell that story? Or like, why didn't I thank that guy? You know what I mean? Like, you know, a lot of regrets, but that just makes me want, when I finally handed in the final version after a million passes and edits and years of work, I was like, you know, it was very cathartic at first, but then it was like, all right, what's next? I never thought I would want to do another cookbook, but you know, it really is an amazing experience. And this is now I'm having fun, you know, telling the world about it. Like the hard part's over in my book.
Yeah. You got the first one done. You probably got tons of material for another one. That's so cool. And it really did turn out wonderful. It's funny. The photographs are amazing. The recipes are wonderful. I think it's a pretty dang cool book.
Thank you.
I don't even know what else to say.
I don't know.
Your pizza chapter looks amazing too. By the way,
I got a great Chicago thin crust in there, which you don't see a lot, tavern style. I got a very well-tested Lou Malnati clone deep dish pizza. I got a Detroit. I got a Napolitan style. I got pizza puffs. I got Panzerotti's. I love pizza. I mean, you know, I'm the sandwich king, but man, when it's time to treat myself and go all in. I mean, if you want to see, I mean, I should just put a show of me just not even talking, just eating pizza. It's often grotesque, Roger.
Well,
I love it. Nope. I can't shut it off. I don't know
what to say to that. It looks good. I've got a lot of pizza fans, homemade pizza makers too. My audience are going to be jazzed about that. So is it out today? Is today the release day?
Today is the day.
April 13th.
Lucky 13, baby.
Okay. And
climbing the charts, Roger. And now I have to like look at, and I keep like refreshing Amazon to see where I'm like charting. Ugh.
She's a cruel mistress, isn't she?
It is. It is.
So I know obviously people can get it on Amazon, and I'll put the link in the show notes and all that. But I mean, you know, cookbooks aren't that hard to find, but I'm more interested in you just telling us where people can find more about you. I know obviously they could watch The Kitchen on the Food Network and see you. They could listen to your podcast. Links to everything I'll put in the show notes. But but what else? Do you have a website, social media?
You know what? ComeOnOver.com is kind of the hub. You can go to MarlProvisions.com, which is my line of craft jardineras, butcher boxes, and prime Italian beef kits. We're coming out with a whole new honey jardinera this Friday, which we ship nationwide, 3 packs. If you're not familiar with, I have a whole like 6 pages on jardinera in the book, how to make it, the Chicago people's affinity for it. You know, it's a pickled, fermented, colorful, oil packed melange of vegetables and peppers that we put on everything. So I figured I'm the guy to bring it to the world, and that's what we're doing. So yeah, I mean, that's how you find me, right? The podcast, the show, the everything. I'm kind of tired, Roger, you know, just keep drinking coffee.
You're doing too much.
Bringing me coffee and says, get to work.
Well, you know what? This has been super fun. I appreciate your knowledge bombs on cooking for a group. We'll get the book out in front of people so they can check it out too. Is there any final words you want to leave us with on for home cooks and your book or anything?
Hey, when it's time, you pick up this book, you get a couple tips, but we're getting there. So we're turning the corner, Roger, hopefully.
All right.
I got to say. Well,
good. Me too. Well, Jeff, thanks.
Thank you so much, Roger. We'll see you next time.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jeff Morrow. I told you at the beginning, it was a lot of fun. He is a funny guy. And really just a joy to talk to. Again, the show notes for this episode are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/183. You'll find information on how to get a hold of Jeff's book, Come On Over, as well as links to his podcast, his Moral Provisions company, all sorts of stuff he's got going on. So kitchencounterpodcast.com/183 to get to all that good stuff. So Jeff, thanks so much for stopping by the show. It was an absolute pleasure and a lot of fun to talk to you. And best of luck with your new book. Hey, I'm going to be back next week, and I'm actually bringing my wife along for this show because we are going to talk about a dish that we had when we were in Belize many, many years ago, which we actually recreated last week. And that's going to be the focal point of the episode next week. I don't want to get all into that now because I want to keep you curious. But yeah, look for that episode. My wife will be on the show. We're going to talk about cooking a Belizean favorite. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for one more episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. All right, everybody, thanks once again for joining me today on the show. It means a lot. If you think your family or friends might get some value out of the show as well, be sure to let them know how to find it, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Podcasts or Amazon or wherever you consume fine podcasts everywhere. It would mean a lot to me, and they'll get a kick out of it too, I'm sure. So until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.